Human Resources Manager. Learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced with Renee Fels, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Tarasena, Tammy Warrenoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamari Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Honey Masood. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And you are listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook at 90.1 FM. And believe it or not, 107.3 FM. If you're very close to Stony Brook. It's just about 6 o'clock. Not quite 6 o'clock yet, so let's take the extra seconds to remind everybody, if you have not already gotten vaccinated against COVID-19, what are you waiting for? It's easy, and it's fun. But mostly, it's effective. It could save your life and the life of others. Please, get vaccinated so we can get back to normal. All right, it's 6 o'clock, and now we can officially begin this week's edition of Off the Wall.
Thank you.
everybody. The program is Off the Wall. I'm Andrew Goldstein here with you, joined by Kyle.
Me too. I'm over here.
Yeah. And here we are again for another exciting Tuesday evening wrap-up of what's going on in the world and various things like that.
Your world, our world, the whole world.
And the big news, of course, it's actually something, I didn't mention this on the air, but I was thinking about it a week or two ago. Remember that bull that got away out east? We somehow seem to have forgotten about it. Well, guess what? They caught the bull, finally. July, this bull escaped from being slaughtered and has been living on the East End in relative comfort until last week when Barney the Bull, which is the name he's been given, was finally caught shortly before midnight last Wednesday. Caught by the New Jersey Sanctuary founder, who spent weeks on his trail. This guy's been out there for weeks hunting a big black bull that I was starting to believe didn't exist. The bull was captured at a former duck farm in Mauritius, because that's where bulls go. They'll go to a duck farm, even the closed one. He went into a temporary corral, which was set up by Mike Stura. He's the guy who runs the sanctuary. He will provide Barney with his new home at that sanctuary. He'd been getting accustomed to eating hay from a feed trough inside of the corral, and once he was in the right position, Stura sprung the lock remotely to close him in. And there was some commotion, I believe, as the bull didn't like to be closed in anywhere. But he said, I've never seen a steer kick like that hard. Technically, Barney, Stura said he's going to rename. And I agree, you should rename. Barney's a stupid name.
Fresh start. Yeah.
Yeah. The bull is a steer or a neutered bull. He probably came to Long Island from Texas. And ranchers usually neuter calves starting at about 3 months old. Another thing to love Texas for. He appears to have fended for himself quite successfully in his time at large. At the sanctuary, he cannot be introduced to Stura's other cattle, sheep, goats, and pigs, until his blood test results are reviewed.
For COVID?
Well, you got to check for everything. I don't know exactly what kind of bull diseases you have to check for, but they're going to be thorough.
Well, he's been out there. He's been, you know, having that fun this summer.
Dense woods, a river, and the fast-moving, often congested Sunrise Highway were all so close to the area that Barney called home that Stura said neither lassos nor tranquilizers could be used. The former could easily get caught in branches or wrap around trees, while tranquilizers would not kick in for nearly half an hour, giving Barney time to run into danger before collapsing. I didn't know tranquilizers took a half hour to take effect.
I like that they put some thought into what possible impacts might result from choosing one or the other option there.
The other thing is that there was another looming issue coming up, and that was deer hunting season is about to begin. And so they were worried that the bull would somehow get caught up in that. I'm not sure exactly how, as a hunter or as the hunted. No, he would hunt deer whenever he feels like it, right? He doesn't observe.
He might get mistaken for a really prized
buck. How do you mistake
buck?
A huge black bull for a little tiny deer?
Have you ever met hunters?
Okay, yeah, that's a good point there.
You have hunter pals that they just all of a sudden a giant bull comes in their sights and they think, oh, that's a bull.
Well,
look at the antlers on that. I mean, I don't know. They're probably, you know, they get distracted. They forget what they're actually hunting for, and all of a sudden, oops, you know. It'd be a problem.
Well, you know, a lot of credit not only to Long Islanders, but especially to this guy. They don't name his sanctuary. You know, I'm going to try and track down what his sanctuary is called. But his name is Mike Stura, Stura. And basically, he will now give this bull a place to live, a place to live out his life and not be hunted, not be slaughtered. I think that's pretty, and he spent months waiting for this moment. It's just great to see it work out that way, where some compassion is shown. So Barney the Bull, whatever you want to call him, on his way to Jersey. And yeah, Jersey has some really nice areas, some wildlife, and he's gonna be pleased there, I'm sure.
I'm glad this guy didn't give up on him, you know, and think, we might not, you know, be spending time wisely, or this may not turn into something, or he got away, or he just stuck with, you know, he could have thrown up his hands, and then what would have happened?
So, I know, right? I think he was living out of his car or something out there, just waiting for the Skyland Sanctuary. Skyland Sanctuary and Animal Rescue in Wantage, New Jersey, Wantage. Please, folks, if you're in the position, donate. Do whatever you can. Make this place survive and flourish, because what they're doing, it's great for all of us.
Yeah, and being there, you know, caring and providing an option and not forgetting about it, like mm-hmm. so many, like we were suggesting, maybe people forgot, but great end to that. I'm glad it worked out.
Yeah, me too. Sometimes that happens. Okay, so speaking of Bull, our local representative, Lee Zeldin, kind of sad news, definitely sad news, that he was diagnosed with leukemia over a year ago, I think. Or was it November? Actually, under a year ago. Good news is it's in full remission, and he's expected to live a full life without any effects. I hope that is certainly true. Doesn't change all the bad that this guy has done and continues to do. And, you know, I want to just read a couple of things that appeared in our local newspaper, the Village Times/Herald, and maybe it's called The Record, too. I'm not really sure. But this is an editorial that they wrote about this, entitled, "In Remission, Zeldin Should Now Consider Stance on Public Health." Last week, Congressman Lee Zeldin formally announced that he is now in remission from leukemia. The Shirley native said, by the way, that's where the bull was running around too, right in that area. The Shirley native said that back in November 2020, he was diagnosed with the illness, and after 9 long months, he's now cancer-free. And again, that is good news. It's impressive. Zeldin has done quite a lot while battling cancer and keeping it quiet from the public. He won his re-election the same month he was diagnosed. He was in Congress when the insurrection in the U.S. Capitol happened in January. He announced he also tried to overthrow the election, and that's that same day. But okay, fine. You know what? We'll skip over that for now. He announced his run for governor and has been campaigning for that office since. One might even say he's been doing that instead of his job in Congress. But we'll go gloss over that too.
Wait, how much are we going to gloss over?
We're going to do a fair amount of gloss, because we don't gloss usually. You know, and to get through this, I need to gloss a little bit. So while he has been busy at work, and I'm putting work in air quotes, throughout his treatment, he also has done some things that a typical cancer patient would absolutely steer away from. We're happy to hear that he's healthy again, and he has beaten a disease that has taken thousands of lives. But what's most concerning is that while going through chemotherapy, he chose not to wear a mask, and in fact, has taken a strong stance against them. Masks are protecting others, such as Zeldin now, who have compromised immune systems and who are most at risk. It was discouraging to know now that the congressman has held several anti-mask and unmask our kids rallies where people were in close proximity to each other. Zeldin was the lucky one. Other people are not always so lucky, and with new variants spreading, immunocompromised people could be hit harder. According to a new study published by University College London, cancer has become an increasing public health priority in the UK after vaccines and other measures continue to contain the spread of COVID-19. Findings from the study showed 40,000 late diagnoses of cancer due to a lack of emergency referrals by general doctors and fewer face-to-face appointments. Delays caused by lockdown could result in 10,000 people dying of cancer significantly earlier than would otherwise have been the case. Could the U.S. follow suit? We hope that representatives such as Zeldin, who now has personal experience to relate to, will reconsider their stances on anti-masking, vaccinations, and general public health. The cold months are coming, and germs will be everywhere. We need to keep each other safe. That excellent editorial from last Thursday's Village Times / Herald here in the Three Village area. And I think that definitely sums it up. You know, you basically, you got a message, you know, you got exposed to something that many people will experience, many other people will not experience, but you now have seen it firsthand and you're lucky enough to have survived. And I think that knowledge should be used to benefit all of us. You have that power. I want to also read a letter in that same edition of the Village Times / Herald, actually on the very same page, a letter from Shoshana Hershkowitz of South Setauket. In a recent campaign event upstate, Congressman Lee Zeldin shared his leukemia diagnosis. Though I have been one of his biggest critics, I want to wish him well. No one deserves to suffer from this kind of illness and the toll it takes on a family. I'm pleased to hear he is in remission and responding well to treatment. It should be noted that part of why his prognosis is so good is the excellent health care he and other members of Congress enjoy, the kind he has voted to deny the rest of us dozens of times. He has voted to repeal the Affordable Care Act and against lowering prescription drug costs. He has voted for budgets that gutted Medicare and Medicaid while benefiting from excellent health care paid for by our tax dollars. There are too many families that would not be able to afford the same excellent care Zeldin has received. Every one of us deserves the same excellent health care members of Congress receive. It is my hope that Zeldin's own experience will change his thinking on the issue, and he will come to understand that health care is a right and not a privilege for the powerful, wealthy, and well-connected. Thank you, Shoshana Hershkowitz, for that excellent letter in last week's Village Times / Herald. And, you know, I think there's really not much left for us to say here, because that is pretty much it, spot on. This kind of diagnosis can really be sobering and change your way of thinking. And there's no shame in that. There's no shame in saying, yeah, you know what? I had a revelation here. You know, I thought something through. I mean, do you remember what was the guy that was confronted in the elevator during the hearings for the Supreme Court Justice, Brett Kavanaugh? Flake from Arizona, I think it was?
Jeff Flake.
Yeah, and he was basically confronted in the elevator by victims of sexual assault who said, by voting this way, you are ignoring us. That made him think. He went to the floor of Congress and said, we need to postpone this. We need to do a more thorough job. I mean, in the end, didn't change the outcome, but it's something when you reach people and when they change their minds. I have so much more respect for them when that happens.
I think there's also an environmental tie-in, because if you really look into cancers of the blood like this, there are a variety of causes, and top of my list would be benzene, which is a octane booster in gasoline, and it's the thing that you smell at every gas station. It's all around us, and it has been shown to lead to leukemia and instances of that disease. The longer we continue to support fossil fuels and toxic chemicals like that, and not doing things for our groundwater, our wastewater, our food, and, you know, plastic contamination, you could go there, these persistent chemicals and stuff. It's not just fascism and bad vibes that cause these kinds of diseases. And we all, you know, express our best wishes and speedy recovery when people succumb to this stuff. But it isn't, in my opinion, always just out of nowhere. And when you're in power and you can affect a lot of those things I just listed off, these kinds of moments may be a cause for taking an additional look at some of the other subject matter than just health.
Yeah. And, you know, I hear the rationale that, we have to, you know, keep our, you know, society going. We can't just grind to a halt because of these issues. Fair enough. But when there are alternatives, must you resist the alternatives? You know, clean energy, wind power and solar power, that electric cars, things that are proving themselves to be effective. And yes, you can say, but it's not quite as good as this for this particular reason. Okay, then make it better. Make it so that it is good, because we have to all agree that something that does not pollute is better than something that does. And if you find yourself standing up for coal mines or for oil refineries or for basically releasing pollutants into the air for any reason, you're on the wrong side. Whether you're on the wrong side because you don't have a choice right now or because you're being pigheaded, that's, you know, that's I guess up to you to decide. But there are alternatives, and there are so many promising technologies, and we should all be throwing everything into that ring so that we can develop them, make them better, so that we don't have to keep living like this. And then, yes, kind of like Kyle said, there'll be less leukemia diagnoses because this kind of crap won't be all around us.
Yeah, just benzene spills get underreported. You know, it's boring. You know, it's local news. It only appears in, you know, Houston and the Gulf of Mexico, where all the refineries sort of coalesce in large part. And they just, you know, oh, 20,000 gallons of this, you know, 30,000 of that. It's all diluted in the waterways.
It's boring. It's like mass shootings. They don't want to hear about that.
We just keep, you know, going on to the sports scores and weather. And it's like just another day in America, and it doesn't have to be.
No. That's what I don't get. I understand why people are frustrated that their way of life is changing. But when you're presented with something that can solve this, why resist it? Why push back and say, no, this is, the old way is better, even though it's been proven to be more deadly and ultimately less efficient? And, you know, even if it cost a little more to do something in a clean, safe way, I think it's worth it. But with enough development, enough advancement, it'll be cheaper. It'll be cheaper and a lot more effective. So we need to all support this. We need to all support this and not look at it as some kind of political issue, like everything is these days.
Or that we're islands, right? That we can't be touched by the other aspects of human and social interaction or environmental and our habitat or habitat loss. Like those things inherently are connected. No matter how many golf courses you separate yourself from the rest of the world by, you're still connected in as many ways through air, water, all of those important things to life.
Speaking of golf courses, do you know there's a golf course on Route 347 in Sopsitoka, Port Jefferson Station? I'm not sure what you call it.
Didn't it get upended? They had a bad year in 2020, right?
It's across the street from the Walbaums that used to be there. That's no longer there.
Yeah, I got you. I know where that is.
Where the HSBC that's closed. And
another defunct bank.
The old Fox Theater that went out of business decades ago.
I don't know about that, but
okay, by the old folks' home, where there's all the old folks. There's like three different versions of them in quick succession.
Landing.
Retirement community, some kind of more caregiven type place. I don't know what they're called.
They all have different names.
They're like all different names.
The plateau and the decline. And
yeah, the final place that you'll ever live. I like them for their directness, I'll say that, but it could be a little disturbing. But apparently they're going to build another one or something like that where there was an old golf course. I'm trying to figure out, should I be upset by this or not? I know I should be upset when forests are cleared, when basically all kinds of wildlife are driven out so that we can build shopping centers or houses or something like that. But should I be upset that a golf course is being ripped up to build houses? I mean, was there much in the golf course than just grass and a bunch of cranky old people with sticks?
I think actual housing, I mean, depending if it's somewhat affordable, you know, what kind of landscaping choices they make. But I would say whatever natural habitat was there was already lost once the golf course
was put in. Yeah, because, I mean, if you're going to build houses, you're going to plant trees or have trees there. So wouldn't that be better than the golf course?
Yeah, because the golf course itself is all monoculture. It's like turf and highly engineered. At least you might get a little variation in landscaping for housing.
That grass doesn't just grow like that. You have to put all kinds of chemicals and things, and that's bad for the environment. The best thing you can do is have a lawn that grows naturally. It might not look, you know, perfect or pristine, but it's not supposed to. People who have, you know, sod on their front lawn or back lawn or whatever, and pour all kinds of chemicals into it to keep it looking that way. That's not good for the environment.
Well, they get it sprayed and dyed, and then all the water too.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of water involved.
Did I tell you? Well, I mean, you're part of it, so you know. But we might have found the solution to the tick problem around here, around Long Island.
I've heard there's like different studies and all kinds of different techniques people are using. There's a lot to learn about this.
Well, I'd like to know, especially if you're listening on Long Island, our email address, otw@2600.com. Unfortunately, we can't take phone calls from the remote location we're at now, but you can write to us if you have a phone or a computer or some way of writing, otw@2600.com. Let us know how ticks have been this year for you. Have you gotten a lot of tick bites? Have you seen a lot of ticks? We have gotten quite a number. We spend a lot of time outdoors, but I'd say at least once a week is normal to be picking a tick off of one of us. Usually you catch them fast, especially if you know you're looking for them.
Basically, as soon as you come in from outside.
There are a number of things, and people blame the deer for this. It's not just the deer. White-footed mouse, I believe, is a primary way. I've never looked at the feet of a mouse, so I don't really know if it's white-footed mouse or some other color. But yeah, apparently they spread it around more than the deer. And if you got rid of all the deer, you'd still have the ticks. So,
and chipmunks especially.
Uh-huh, yeah. I mean, deer get in the way of things, I know, and they eat plants. Yeah, it's the mice that are really the issue as far as spreading them around. Whatever. The ways that you can fight back. First of all, wild turkeys. We see them around now, and that's great. They're always cranky, so if you get near them, they will chase you. They won't back down, but they're kind of awesome, and they travel in packs.
They devour ticks.
They devour ticks.
Hundreds an hour or something
and
crazy like
that. They are methodical about that. So if you're lucky enough to have wild turkeys come through your yard, that's consider that a vacuum cleaner. That's a good thing. And anything we can do to get more wild turkeys in the area, I think is a good thing. Yeah, they slow down traffic. Good. They should. They should slow down traffic. But something else we discovered this year accidentally, because we were trying to improve some of the plants that we were attempting to grow this year. I think we did better than last year. We didn't have that damn groundhog get into the garden, but we did have Ida come through and flood the place destroy some plants.
And much better with the physical barrier.
Yeah.
That helped, but it was other insects and stuff, and we were looking for something that would address multiple species of bugs and aphids and things like that.
And the answer came to us through a series of suggestions and some research, ladybugs. Ladybugs are the most beneficial insects ever invented. They go and they eat aphids and other kinds of pests. You know, I've never seen a ladybug do this. They always look so peaceful. But apparently they really get down to business when it's time, and they take care of a lot of pests in your garden. So if you see a ladybug, that's a good thing. And some people have ladybugs that just kind of appear in their homes because I guess they hatch or something in some part of the house.
Or they get lost.
Yeah, but if that happens to you, just let them outside. That's where they want to be, and by no means exterminate them, because they are good insects. There's no bad that they do. So what we did was we bought a bunch of them. We bought, I think, 1,500 ladybugs. They came in the mail. They literally came in the mail, which is fine. They can handle the trip. In fact, they can even handle beyond that. If you put them in, did we put them in the refrigerator or the freezer?
The refrigerator.
Okay. You can put them in the refrigerator and they go to sleep. I don't know how long you can do that for, maybe a week or two. But basically, when you release them, you release them in groups of 20 or so?
Yeah, you kind of like sprinkle a small bunch of them
mm-hmm.
in different portions of your growing area or whatever your garden.
Just randomly, you don't have them line up by name.
Yeah, they're not that cooperative. They kind of get all over. You have to be very, very quick and careful. Otherwise, they'll be crawling up your arm.
Crawling up your arm, and that might freak people out. But so we released a whole bunch of them, 1,500 of them.
We used one of those resealable bags that helped a lot.
Yes. Because
you put what they came in inside the resealable bag. You know, do your bunch as far as distributing just a small amount of them, then zip that, you know, mm-hmm. closed so you can relocate and find another area.
So for the next week or two, we saw them all over the garden, you know, standing on plants and just sort of exploring and things like that. And we felt comfortable that they were doing their job. And then, as inevitably will be the case, they kind of just found other places to go. They just left. You can't stop them from doing this. Ladybugs will seek out a better life.
The really fascinating part about this particular creature that we discovered was that they actually seek out tick nests.
Yes.
And what happens is they co-locate their nesting area so that when their baby ladybug larvae are hatching or small, they are able to feast on the eggs or whatever kind of pre-tick larva that correspond. I guess, but in other words, they go for the young of the tick's nest.
And how do you find a tick nest?
I have no idea.
I didn't know that's how they live.
Apparently, this happens.
Yeah. So we didn't know this. We thought they were just going to be good for the garden. So they disappeared, and apparently, this is what they do. They lay their eggs near those tick nests so that when the larvae come out, they immediately have feeding area, and apparently they have an advantage over ticks even as larvae, which is pretty awesome and also scary. And if you ever look at a baby ladybug, I guess is the only way to describe it, it doesn't look anything like a ladybug. It looks kind of like a ladybug, but it's, you know, you would mistake it for something else, and you might even be terrified of it. Anyway, so they feed on the ticks in those nests, and what we've noticed this summer, for the last, I'd say, 2 months, have not gotten a single tick bite. So these ladybugs might be serving that purpose as well. It could just be a big coincidence. Maybe there's, like, tick COVID out there, and that's why none of them are showing up.
Well, if you know anything about the timing, too, like, seasonally, is it a matter of, like, several weeks ago, there is a drop-off in their activity?
No, we got bitten a year ago this
time of
year.
We're not experts on it, but
yeah, but I know we got bitten every single
exactly
week for well into the fall.
Seems to have been a precipitous drop since deploying all of our beneficial ladybugs.
So you can buy ladybugs online or at local stores that sell gardening stuff, I guess.
Any kind of farm supply store or growing, like yards and gardening and stuff.
1500 cost about $20, and you can get a lot more than that if you have a lot of land. I would suggest it. I wouldn't do it right now because it's getting cold, but next spring, consider that and let us know what happens.
This was cool stuff, though. It was like just us learning, trying to get a little better at being around plants, and I don't know, just not being so novice in gardening. And it's good for your mental health, I think, and fresh air and stuff. It felt good to have a few more successes and not be completely ravaged by groundhogs this season. Hopefully other people were able to keep the groundhogs at bay as well, and this harvest season will have at least a couple things that they grew to admire. And please tell us, otw@2600.com.
Yeah, and if you don't have a former hurricane / tropical storm come through and dump a foot of water in an hour and a half on your garden, you'll probably do better than we did this year. Yeah, no groundhog, but Ida really threw us for a loop. It's unbelievable to me. Ida wasn't a tropical storm when she hit here, but caused more damage than a hurricane. That's incredible.
Yeah, we just like seemed to get the edges of it, and then it just came in with those sustained heavy winds and downpours. It was something to see.
And here. and trees are still coming down as a result of that because the ground is still saturated, and a lot of trees have been weakened. So be careful when you're driving. You know, a massive tree or branch comes down, it can squash your car pretty easily. I don't know how you can be careful, though, when you're driving of trees above you, but just be alert. Maybe you'll see something moving. I don't know.
Or keep up the pace so you don't get stuck under it.
Yeah, yeah. Honk your horn in case people get... hey, you know what? As long as we're talking about roads, 25A, they in the local Three Village area, they are finally paving 25A. Yeah, it might as well have been a dirt road for the last few years. It's been that bad. But now they've done that thing where they rip up the pavement, and it's like driving in the Yukon. It's really rough. In fact, they have signs that say rough road now, which is really awesome. But you have to be careful. You have to watch out for massive holes in the road. And I imagine what they're planning on doing is paving it with real pavement, and it'll be a smooth ride from Stony Brook to all the way to Port Jefferson, which is two villages. But still, it's been a curse over the last few years for the people in this area.
Absolutely. I think they grate it, or grading. They're basically not a grading. I don't know. It basically cuts grooves in, and it tears up a couple inches, all the patching and stuff they did to install the gas line.
Yeah, they did a lot of things. They did things like install gas and sewer systems. I guess they were waiting for all that to happen.
Better drains for surface water to keep roads from flooding and washing out. Mm-hmm. So leaf drains, all that has been installed in some areas. And then the gas line was a major thing, probably because they need more gas to run the turbines of the power plant and service whatever other businesses.
Wait. They need more gas, but doesn't the power plant produce that? Why would they need...
I think the power plant is gas-fired.
Okay.
And it would seem to me that if you're going to build a bunch of condos and, you know, add a bunch of service lines, you might run an extra big line to the power plant that also will be creating more power for all of those new locations. I don't know. I don't work for National Grid.
But they're shutting down that power plant is what I heard.
So, is that what's happening?
Yeah, I think that's what's going to happen. They're going to shore them the whole thing. Yeah, oh, wow. That's a verb now. You can do that.
You're going to get shoreed. Well, maybe that's what they're doing. They are running gas in... as an alternative to power from there. But either way, it was a mega project in the area. Many people near the university have been affected. And those areas where it's graded, it like drops off 2 inches. So drive very, very carefully. Look for places where there's a bump. Otherwise, you might get a flat tire and get into real trouble.
You ever see where there's a particularly bad bump in a road and you see four or five cars pulled over that have all gotten flat tires and they get to meet each other and exchange stories and things like that? That could be happening here. Yeah.
Or like a fender bender because somebody slammed on the brakes right before it to try to avoid hitting it very fast.
Yeah, it can be dangerous, especially in rush hour. It might even be entertaining to set up a lawn chair or something and sit next to 25A and just watch people go by and see the level of frustration in their faces. It's entertaining. It's entertaining. It's, we have perverse pleasure sometimes. But you know, when this is all over, there's going to be some person somewhere who decides to get something installed that involves digging up part of the road. And to that person, I say shame in advance. And we are going to find out who you are, and we're going to publicly shame you, because that stretch of 25A is going to be pristine, and I want it to stay pristine for at least 1 year. All right, so if you go and decide, hey, I want extra water pipe or gas pipe or something that involves digging up the road, we're going to find out, and you won't live it down.
And that's 1 year, including winter. So
the plowing, wouldn't it include winter?
Well, it has to include like snow plows and stuff. It has to survive that.
Of course, yes. Yeah. All right.
What else is going on?
Well, speaking of progress, the Shinnecock Indian Nation this Saturday voted overwhelmingly to approve two tribal measures that will advance their recreational marijuana programs, setting the stage for sales and usage perhaps by year's end. The Shinnecock Indian Nation, located out east in the Southampton area, the votes authorize a framework for a tribal ordinance that will set rules for commercial sales by a tribal holding company and other tribal businesses centered on recreational cannabis. That ordinance still must be drawn up and a final vote taken on it in coming months. That's according to Tribal Chairman Brian Polite. That's a nice last name to have, Polite. I'm sure it's not pronounced that way, but that's how it's spelled. It means we are going forward in recreational sales, both for business and a market for tribal members to engage in sales in an entrepreneurial fashion, he said. The tribe has already passed an ordinance authorizing medicinal marijuana economic development. The first vote was 114 in favor, 30 opposed. It provides authorization for the legal framework for the tribally chartered company. Little Beach Harvest is the name of the company, Little Beach Harvest, to move forward with tribally sanctioned recreational marijuana operations. The second vote, which 20 people somehow went to the other side, 94 to 50, would authorize individual tribal members to move forward with businesses in the field as well. So I guess not everybody is enthused with that, but still a pretty overwhelming victory for that. Polite predicted that if development of the final ordinance language proceeds on course this fall, the tribe could be in the market with recreational cannabis products 9 to 10 months ahead of other statewide marijuana businesses. A passage of the framework gives us a huge advantage of putting our brand out there, developing an industry. We will be one of the big boys. Man, I am all in favor of that.
I will only buy locally grown and native-owned cannabis if that comes to fruition. So get me on the newsletter. I'd like to be first in line.
Yeah, you know, I just like how they were able to cut through all the nonsense and just get this done.
Yeah.
What we're seeing here throughout Brookhaven, Islip has already opted out, which is insane. No sales allowed in Islip. And for what? For fear, for ignorance. You know, come at us with all the arguments. They have been made, and they don't make sense. To say that this... give me an argument, Kyle. Give me an argument that's used against having marijuana sales in your local community. I know Smithtown is... aren't they having a meeting, or did they already have a meeting? I know there's a meeting coming up, or maybe it just happened. I really should pay more attention to this, where they might make it impossible in the village of Smithtown to have any place that sells marijuana. But can you think of any of the arguments that have been made against this?
It's going to cause accidents on the road.
Okay, how would it cause accidents? Because people are what, smoking while they're driving or high while they're driving? Well, first of all, you know, if the numbers don't bear that out, there's a far more serious problem with drinking and driving. People who are high while driving, they tend to drive slower, for one thing. But if somebody is driving recklessly for any reason, that should be a crime, absolutely. And if any kind of drug is responsible for that, yes, that should be an issue. But the studies have not shown that marijuana contributes to that in any significant way. So I'm sorry, Kyle. That's just an invalid argument. What else you got?
Oh, I have to have more?
I'm ready for all of them.
Kids.
Okay, fine. You're concerned about kids having access to marijuana? Let me just tell you, Kyle. All right. You know, right now, how does a kid get access to marijuana? He goes to the guy that's selling it in the alleyway.
You buy it from the librarian.
Is that true?
I don't know.
I thought you got fired.
How do you think all those late fees disappear?
Are you talking about the actual librarian, or are you just... Oh, you know what? Sorry. Okay.
That's different. I thought you were talking about...
Why would you make such an example that was so specific?
I was joking.
Yeah, of course. So, the kid goes to some guy in the alley that is selling pot and also selling other drugs. And this also covers your next objection, which is that it's a gateway drug. It's a gateway drug because the kid or anybody else goes and buys from the guy in the street. All right. And basically that guy also sells other drugs. Having a dispensary where you have to be over 21, an interesting thing I learned in Canada, it's 19, which that's different. But you have to be over 21 here in New York. And I imagine everywhere in the States. And you're not going to get in if you're a kid. And you know what? They're also not going to suggest cocaine to you or any other kind of drug. They're going to be knowledgeable people that sell a safe product. And it's not going to be something that is in any way dangerous. So if anything, and that you know, all of a sudden the guy in the alley, where does his business go? You know, the only thing he can do now is try and sell the kids, which makes it a lot more of an obvious crime, a lot more dangerous for him, and probably not something that's worth his while. So the black market disappears, and the gateways disappear, and the kids actually are more protected. So I'm sorry, Kyle, I have to throw that argument right into the trash. You know, what Islip has done is basically made it possible for the black market to continue and not be protected in this way. This is not just me saying this. This has been borne out in the places where dispensaries exist. Massachusetts and other states, Colorado, Washington, all kinds of places, Canada, the whole country of Canada. I hope New York is a shining example.
Yeah, it's important to just remember this stuff has gone on and will continue with or without these different jurisdictions, and creating something that is a little bit more controlled, that the city has some input on, specifically with things like zoning, you know, where and how they get to identify how that would work best for their community. And the sooner those places get past some of the misinformation or fears or reactions and start thinking practically, I think the sooner you have ways for people to use responsibly and in a way that is not disruptive or less disruptive to the community, and it does a fair amount to squelch the drug trade locally, because there's just less customers.
Mm-hmm.
And of course you have revenue at some point.
Yeah, I didn't even touch upon that, because I don't think that should be the primary reason, just for money, because, you know, if you do that, then you have casinos everywhere, and that's really not, that shouldn't be the reason. It should be something that you believe in, that is safe, that is productive. You're providing jobs, and the people that are running the places are really knowledgeable. And we went up to Massachusetts that time. I was so impressed with how professional they were. You were able to order something online, you know, as we were driving up on the phone, and they were there waiting. We did the whole thing outside because of COVID, but so professional, so knowledgeable, so intelligent. There's no reason that can't be prevalent here. Of course, Brookhaven, I believe, has mandated that downtown areas may not have dispensaries. Whatever makes you guys happy. So it'll be in an industrial section, uptown someplace. Maybe at some point they'll realize how silly that is. But the important thing is to have access in one way or another.
Yeah, and there's nothing more relaxing than being able to consume without feeling as though you're committing or violating some community standard or some state or federal law. And for people who have found ways around that throughout the years and existed consuming under prohibition, it's still difficult to get past that mentally. And I think another thing that hasn't been touched on is just how much healing we need as a nation, as a communities, with you know, the opioid epidemic and PTSD, various traumatic,
right,
and other health issues. This could be, albeit recreational, a small component of that. Maybe helping people get away from alcohol or get away from nicotine.
Look, someone who's who has PTSD or is traumatized in some way, or just isn't feeling good. These villages, Farmingdale being an example, have no problem having them go to a bar right on Main Street, drink themselves silly,
become a nuisance,
and who knows what afterwards. You have so many problems, not even counting the health problems, but you know, you've got driving, you've got aggressiveness, all kinds of conflicts that can happen, and it happens over and over again. And yet these same communities are outraged at the possibility that there will be a shop selling cannabis, or that somebody might be smoking pot in their neighborhood instead of drinking in their neighborhood. When's the last time you saw a bunch of people get into a brawl because they've been smoking pot? They smoke too much pot, so they beat the crap out of each other. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen that way. So hopefully we get past all this and can move on to more important things. Kyle, I've got a bit of an issue I have to bring up with you. My laptop is basically the sound source for this radio program. That's where the intro comes from. That's where all kinds of audio sources come. I'm just revealing a lot of our secrets. Earlier, before the show, I came up with the laptop and hooked it up and plugged it in and things like plugged into the power strip down there. The reason I'm bringing this up is because even though I plugged it into the power strip, apparently the power strip was not on. So my laptop is now dead. And what that means is that we don't have any way of sending audio okay, I hear sounds. I'm going to turn this down so it doesn't send any welcome sounds as it boots up again. And hopefully that will happen soon so that we have an audio source for our outro and other things.
Yes, that was related to the utility crises and other cleaning operations in our remote hangar.
Yeah, I turned something off I shouldn't have turned off. I know. How many times?
We had to move some equipment and take some deliveries, so it was my fault.
Okay, we're back up. Thank you for that. You know, just because you plug things into a power strip doesn't mean the power strip is on. I know that now.
Especially in abandoned factories, you just... It's hard to find an outlet.
So today, was it today? Yeah, it was today. There was a deadline where basically Governor Hochul said that health workers have to be vaccinated or they lose their jobs. It was either today or yesterday. I'm not exactly sure which day it was. But the point is, a whole bunch of people are losing their jobs because they refuse to get vaccinated. Healthcare workers. I don't understand how you can work in healthcare and potentially carry a deadly disease and willingly do so. It's just, you're in the wrong field.
The disease being not believing in disease.
Well, that's another disease. But yeah, you know, you got to take a stand somewhere. And bravo to states that are finally doing this. I don't know what took so long. There's a lot of idiots I know standing in the way. But please, Catholic Health Services has furloughed several hundred employees for defying a state mandate to get vaccinated against COVID-19, while Stony Brook University Hospital has suspended, without pay, close to 200 employees. Yeah. If you drive by University Hospital at Stony Brook, you'll see 200 people just milling around the street not knowing what to do.
Holding out soup cans.
They're not getting paid. They're not getting it. Don't encourage them. Don't encourage them. Now, those dismissals and suspensions came after Northwell Health on Monday fired about 24 people in leadership positions for not abiding by the state order. And Mount Sinai South Nassau Hospital in Oceanside says 65 of its employees were facing unpaid suspension for defying the mandate.
So do you get unemployment if you're suspended over that or kicked out?
I guess that's the question they're asking right now.
And what do you update your resume with? Refused to obey public health, and I'm sorry, what industry are you applying to work in?
The deadline to get at least one shot of the vaccine was midnight Monday. You know, it doesn't help me. Was that Monday or was that Tuesday? Midnight Monday could be either one. Okay, yeah, I guess it doesn't really matter. The point is, it's in effect now. Catholic Health Services praised its workers for serving throughout the pandemic and insisted the furloughs would not affect operations. Workers who refused to get the vaccine will be placed on furlough for 2 weeks, after which they will be terminated if they remain unvaccinated. The vast majority of our staff is fully vaccinated, with only a few hundred people furloughed from across six hospitals, three skilled nursing facilities, home health care, hospice, and numerous physician practices, according to Dr. Jason Golbin, the Executive Vice President and Chief Medical Office of Catholic Health. The public can rest assured knowing that there is no interruption in the safe quality care Catholic Health provides. Stony Brook University said fewer than 200 employees are being placed on suspension without pay and will be scheduled to meet with labor relations representatives to discuss their circumstances. While awaiting this meeting, they can use vacation or holiday time off. If they continue to elect not to receive the vaccine, they will be terminated in accordance with the New York State Department of Health order. University said 93% of its hospital employees have been vaccinated and the number continued to go up. So, I like how everybody says terminated.
No, but that's kind of answered my question, because Catholic Health, they're paid. They're just not working. And then they get and about to be terminated. And Stony Brook, they're without pay and will be terminated if they don't choose something that will allow them to come back and continue being paid again.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's various sticks and carrots there, but... It's time to choose up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's like smoking in the operating room. They're clamping down on that because they found that it's not healthy. And not being vaccinated against a deadly, contagious virus has also been found to not be healthy, particularly in places like nursing homes and hospices and hospitals, for God's sake. What are you thinking? Work someplace else. This is not the right environment. because guaranteed there's going to be some other disease somewhere down the road that's going to have to be addressed as well. And if you simply believe that you're, you know, Superman or whatever, and won't ever be able to catch or spread any of these diseases, you're living in fantasy land, and people who live in fantasy land shouldn't be taking care of the health of other people, I don't believe.
On top of the fact that they think they're not infinitely replaceable. And I mean, let's talk about how many student nurses and recent graduates are trying to find work. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of people who are willing, who do not care about this vaccination, who will gladly accept a new position.
And that opens up a whole list of things with me. I mean, yeah, now all these opportunities are available for people who want to pursue them. But we have a tremendous amount of people who want to come to this country, who are fleeing oppression and all kinds of horrors. And they are honest, hardworking people. Why would we turn them away? We need them now. We need people like this who are dedicated, who will basically love their country and work hard and make life better for their kids. This is the kind of thing we should be encouraging. So I'm sick of hearing about how places are short-staffed and there aren't enough people to work. Okay, fine. There's a whole supply of people who are willing to come to this country, be a part of it, make it better. And that's supposedly what we stand for. So why on earth are we turning them away? Other than the usual reasons that they're the wrong color or religion or things like that. Because that's also the American way. You know what? We're out of time. I wanted to talk about something, though, before we leave. I've been encoding my vinyl. I think we've mentioned this before. Finally got up to D. For some reason, most of my vinyl is B and C. It's like I'm halfway through, and I just got to D. And that includes Bob Dylan. And I showed you this album yesterday, Blood on the Tracks. I have it here.
Yeah, you were telling me to touch it.
I told you to hold this record in your hands because it just feels so, what's the word?
Heavy.
It's heavy.
It's
got quality in every ounce of it. Just thick. What is this, cardboard?
It's tactile. Yeah. It's got a coated print on the jacket.
Yeah.
It's got a bright colored insert. It's not just like a paper sleeve.
No, it's not paper. It's thick, like too.
It's a cardboard.
And then you've got all these liner notes, and you have artwork. And you pointed this out because I've seen the cover of Blood on the Tracks many, many times. But you looked at it, I think, maybe for the first time. Because
yeah, I've never seen the cover.
We have different musical genres that we are
but that's,
into.
That's really good because you turn me on to things I've never heard of and vice versa.
Vice versa, yeah. But you looked at this what looks like a painting of Bob Dylan. It's actually a picture that has been run through various processes. And you said this. It reminds you of Beethoven. It reminds you of a composer. I don't know if that was the intent, but that is exactly what it looks like. I've looked at this 1,000 times, but I've never actually thought that through. That, yeah, that's the mad composer making his next symphony.
It's like one of those famous, like a bust, where it's just basically the shoulders and up, and he's in profile in that that sort of stylized, mm-hmm. Blurry illustration.
So you need fresh eyes to give you different perspectives on things that you might already know about. Okay, we're going to go out with a song, of course, from that album. And since every song on that album is super long and awesome, I had to pick the shortest song possible so that Finn would start on time. We will see you next week. Have a good night.
We love you.
Yes,
Finn too.
Bye-bye.
I've seen love go by my door. It's never been this close before. Never been so easy or so slow. I've been shooting in the dark too long. When something's not right, it's wrong. You're gonna make me lonesome when you go. Dragging clouds so high above. I've only known careless love. It always has hit me from below. But this time round it's more correct. Right on target, so direct. You're gonna make me loads when you go. Purple clover, Queen Anne lace, crimson hair across your face. You can make me cry if you don't know. Can't remember what I was thinking of. You might be spoiling me too much, love. You're gonna make me loads when you go. I was on the hillside blooming crazy. Crickets talking back and forth in rhyme. Blue River running slow and lazy. I could stay with you forever and never realize the time. Situations have ended sad, relationships have all been bad. Mine have been like Verlaine's and Rambo. But there's no way I can compare all them scenes to this affair. You're gonna make me lonesome when you go. You're gonna make me wonder what I'm doing, staying far behind without you. You're gonna make me wonder what I'm saying. You're gonna make me give myself a good talking to. I look for you in old Honolulu, San Francisco or Ashtabula. You're gonna have to leave me now, I know. But I see you in the sky above, in the tall grass and the ones I love. You're gonna make me lonesome when you go.
Ah, thanks, boys.